On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, us windbags, we're not mad, we're disappointed. We react to the Raiders falling to the Dolphins 26-25. We talk about Jason Witten getting too many snaps, Darren Waller being a beast, and why does Dr. Rory think Derek Carr fakes injuries? This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation. Here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The
Raiders! Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, Rory Parsons.
See if Fitzpatrick can pull a trick out. He got hit as he lofted it up. Blown coverage! Mac Hollins is in bounds at the 41. It's a 34-yard gain, and there's a flag down, likely for a face mask.
And just like that, the Raiders' season officially comes to an end. The Miami Dolphins stop the Raiders 26-25 in the final home game of the 2020 season. And the Dolphins most likely headed to the playoffs. Raiders officially eliminated from postseason action. I'm RJ Clifford. He's Juan Soto. He's Rory Parsons. Boys, what do we make of tonight's game?
I feel like a battered wife. I really do. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter how many times I get the shit kicked out of me, I still love the Raiders. I still love them. It's okay. It's been a rough season. All the excuses they have, a lot of defensive guys on COVID, this and that. We had a bad defensive coordinator, but I still love them. You know, I'm not quitting. I can't quit them.
Yeah. I mean, dude, that hurt. I mean, you also look like a bad wife, by the way, Soto. Like, straight up, dude. You need some sleep, dog.
Oh, dude, fuck.
It's a move that suits you.
Yeah, man. I mean, shit, dude. That, you know, we predicted what was going to happen in this game. I don't think any of us really predicted it being a really close game, a game that we absolutely should have won. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
You're like a blue collar.
That didn't really bother me as a kid.
Look at this. Look at this shit, man. I'm wearing my bells and whistles today.
You are very festive.
Yeah,
I was ready for a holiday party in the black hole.
I was ready for a fucking win,
oh,
dude.
Shit, that's so dope.
Look at this.
Oh god.
Please tell me that light up sweater makes music too.
God damn it, dude.
So yeah. It was a game with like a lot to like for the Raiders. We got three sacks, which was insane. Defense actually showed up today, which was random. Josh Jacobs over 5 yards a carry. Pretty good game. Derek Carr, 21 of 34, 336 yards. Passing touchdown, rushing touchdown, 104.5 quarterback rating. Statistically, defense, offense, running game, passing game, special teams, like on paper was one of our best games. And yet just couldn't put all together when the game was online at the end. I think that that taking a knee on third down when the Raiders were on the one, at the time I thought it was questionable. I was like, okay, let's eat up as much clock as possible. Let's let that let's not put the defense in a position where they have to win the game again. But obviously in hindsight, it's like, I rather would have had the extra 4 points than the extra 23 seconds that the Dolphins would have gotten.
I agree 100%. I was scratching my head why they did that too. You have the ball on like the 2-inch line. They're going to let you, theoretically score as quick as possible. They don't want to let more time off the clock, and they got to go that extra 35 or so yards. You know, they have to go that extra yardage, and they have to score the touchdown. I mean, there was a lot of questionable calls in the game. A lot of questionable calls. We talked about, you know, first and goal on the 5, and you know, one run and two passes, and like, what the hell, you know, our strength, our offensive line, use them. You can't get 5 yards in two plays. Had to kick a field goal, just leaving points on the board. That's one thing that really bugs me. You know, and we talked about that. It really bugs me about the Raiders. I put a lot of it on Carr because I mean,
you put way too much of it on Carr.
No. And here's the reason why.
Yes.
The reason why is we tell you know what, he has all this control at the line. He can change plays. He can do this. He can do that. And these are the plays he's throwing from the six to the three. You know, like that's the play you're going to get yourself into. You have the line, use it. You know, you have the running back, use them. And if we have multiple downs at the five, I don't understand what we're doing, but whatever. Oh, I guess 1 for 9, I guess, right? 1 for 9. We're giving them that hard count as a third down conversion. So 1 for 9 on third down conversion. That's stellar.
Bad night for the offense on third down. No question about it.
Very bad.
A lot of it has to do, I think, with personnel. Like, what's Jason Witten doing there in crucial, like, third down situations and being the targeted tight end? Like, he needs to be seeing more time holding a clipboard, less time with your helmet on, taking away Foster Moreau snaps.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I said, what was it? I'm not mad. I'm disappointed with the defense. I'm mad at the offense. Mm-hmm. I'm mad at John Gruden. I'm mad at Derek Carr. I know it's your boy, but I'm still mad at him.
For what? Why are we mad at Derek Carr? Please tell me.
Look, let's start with Gruden, though, for me. The thing that I got most pissed off about tonight was the personnel mismanagement.
Sure.
You mentioned Witten. That's honestly the obvious one. But I think when we're talking about Witten, we're looking at Moreau as a like-for-like that should be in the game because he's quicker. He's more physical. He can still block.
He's not 412 years old.
He produces in the red zone. He produced last
year. He's a great red zone target. He ticks all these boxes that Witten just doesn't at this point in his career, period. But the other guy that's missing out every time that Witten's getting snaps is Henry Ruggs. I watched it over and over again tonight. Like, when you look at the personnel groupings that we had, more often than not, if Witten's in the game with Waller, it means our third wide receiver that's coming out was Ruggs.
Yeah.
And again, when we're talking about investing such a high draft pick in a wide receiver, he shouldn't be that far down the pecking order in my book. He just shouldn't. And you can look at Ruggs tonight, and ultimately he lost that one-on-one with Xavier Howard, who's possibly the best cornerback in the league this year. There was the deep shot that it looked like an ill-advised throw from Carr in a double coverage, but
yeah,
it somehow got there. Ended
but
up.
It was a perfect. That was a perfect pass. Like,
no, it wasn't.
It was right off of his hands. It was absolutely literally not off of both of Henry Ruggs' hands.
Go watch that again. It was.
I watched it 10 times.
Nah, dude, we'll disagree on this all day. If you watch that again, I don't think it was necessarily a bad pass. It gave the guy a chance to win, and at the end of the day, the cornerback won. But if that's got a little bit more air on it, and Ruggs doesn't have to slow down to work back towards the ball, there's a chance at a touchdown.
And he'd get three hands on it? Like, I don't know what you mean. Like, it bounced off of both. All right, look. We're on the same page that Henry. So look, coming in this game was like, oh, it's Lynn Bowden Jr. that we remember, third round pick. We traded rookie. Lynn Bowden going to do versus Henry Ruggs? You can look at Bowden stats. Oh, 2 receptions for 8 yards. Like, oh, crappy
talking
game.
About
Ruggs had to have done better. Henry Ruggs, 2 targets, 0 receptions. He was outplayed by a guy who had 8 yards receiving.
No,
that's how bad. That's how anonymous Ruggs was.
He was given less opportunities than Lynn Bowden. Big difference. He wasn't outplayed by Lynn Bowden. He wasn't outplayed by anyone. I mean, Aguilar, fantastic. Fantastic job working back towards that ball. But, I mean, like, I texted you guys after that play. The irony behind that play is it's an incredible improvisation from Derek Carr on the rollout. Aguilar to spot that the play's still alive and to work his way away from the defender to stay
amazing
alive.
Amazing job. Amazing. Passing, pass blocking. He had literally over 8 seconds to find his receiver.
Amazing. Everything about that play was fantastic. The irony is Aguilar breaks and he's actually got a step on the defender and it could have been a house call, but Carr threw it back shoulder for some reason. I mean, the play worked. It ended up in a reception and it went for a touchdown, but like, go back and rewatch that. It actually was like an underthrown back shoulder pass as opposed to putting some air under. It's crazy.
Let's not discount Aguilar's open field skills, too.
Yeah.
Dude's a stud, man.
I hadn't seen that. When he was at SC, dude, I have not missed a USC home game. I don't know how long, how many years. And when he was at SC, that's what he did every game. He returned punts. He just was that guy. That was him. You give him one little step, and he's going to get another 10, 15 yards.
Dude, he's the anti-Rodney Hudson. He's got all the press for the wrong reason.
He has 17 sex tapes when Rodney Hudson only needs one for the attention. You know what I mean? Nelson Aguilar, 5 receptions, 155 yards. And of course that fantastic touchdown. Let's revisit that. The play that we thought was going to be the end of the game.
Nearly as many times as he normally does. Carr pumps once, pumps again, extends the play. Derek Carr and that bad boy to loft it up for Aguilar. Makes the adjustment and the move. The veteran Aguilar weaving his way. He will go. Touchdown Raiders. 85 yards of brilliance from Nelson Aguilar.
That whole play took 22 seconds to play out. That's how much time Derek Carr had to throw. That's how many moves Nelson Aguilar made. That was what we thought was the end of the game.
Should have been.
Should have been.
I mean, the announcer nailed it. Aguilar made the adjustment. It was a veteran move. It really was. It was a really impressive play from Aguilar. And a reminder that he's more than just a kind of savvy veteran zone breaker. You know what I mean? He's a threat.
So you were tweeting me that you thought Derek Carr was faking the groin injury. Ooh. Why do you hate Derek Carr so much, Rory?
I don't know if I get on that one.
He's faking. He's faking a groin injury. He's what? He wants sympathy.
I won't take this boat.
He wants time off. I can pull up the text right now, Rory, if you want me to. Do you want me to put it up word for word?
Pull it up, man. Call it out. Whip, whip.
Okay. Keep talking.
So bad.
Discuss this amongst yourselves while I pull up. How is it bad? Our quarterback's faking an injury.
There is a lot of things that I get on Derek Carr about, right? One thing I can't get on him about is his toughness. I can't. He was fucking limping around like the whole game, you know. I don't know, man.
I'm not gonna be
that guy.
Here's my piece. I'm not gonna be the guy either. But
you were. You already were.
I just listen to me. I just don't know. I just don't know. I don't know what a doctor can do, what a physiotherapist can do for a dude with a significant groin injury that is going to get him back to running so freely and jumping. Like, he was...
Okay, hang on.
He showed no signs of it, dude. I'm not saying he faked it. I just don't know what modern medicine can do.
He didn't need to jump for that touchdown. He could have just walked in. He had that push. The offensive line did a great job on his touchdown. He didn't have to jump. He could have just walk straight in.
Derek Carr, dude. If he's playing hurt, amazing. If he's
looked
taking
hurt.
Risks, if he's taking risks like jumping over the top, that's a well-timed, well-executed quarterback sneak. We needed those 6 points. That's a positive play. I just text you guys because for me, again, I don't know what modern medicine can do for a dude with a significant groin injury where he can play the next week and show no ill effects running and jumping.
Here's the exact quote to make sure we don't put words in your mouth. Rory Carr hater, just heard from a source. So now we got Big J journalist Rory Parsons here. Just heard from a source that Carr's groin injury was actually pretty minor and he probably should have played through it last week. Source, my eyes and brain. LOL, hot take.
What did I say?
Hot take, motherfuckers.
How about he's just tough as shit and he overcomes injury? Like you could pull something on a Thursday and still be a sustainable athlete on Saturday. This isn't unheard of to like strain something, pull something. And all reports were saying it wasn't like a massive tear, like he needs surgery. We're not going to see Derek Carr in crutches. It was a strained groin. That was what all the reports
I don't know
were saying.
If you've ever strained your groin. I have.
That's what I'm saying.
No,
dude.
Well, hang on. I have, and I was able to get around in the like next couple days. Okay, let alone
you getting around versus Derek Carr playing an NFL.
Okay, he had how many days?
Soto could come back after 3 days and walk around with a strained groin, Derek Carr could
Jesus
run a marathon.
Christ, I came back from the dead. 25
minutes.
Look,
goddamn, it's not really the same as you going from the fucking living room to the kitchen.
I really want to hear what other injuries Soto's overcome that professional athletes just can't. I hope there's I hope we got a longer list, Soto. I got to hear this.
All I'm saying is he had 10 days, but I'm saying this. After on the second day after I did it, I was like, okay, this sucks, but I can walk and I'm fine. But he had 10 days, number one, with like round the clock care probably. And when I did it, that shit was fucking painful. That shit was terrible. I couldn't even like keep my foot straight up. I had to keep my leg at an angle because that shit was just on fire. and it was not on fire for some good reason.
I've been there too, man. You can get around, no doubt. You can definitely get around, but you can't really plant it and push off of it in a way. Like when you're a quarterback and you're setting your feet with a wide base to deliver a throw off your front foot like you're taught to, which Derek Carr was doing today, like he's really – I don't understand how he's able to plant. Again, I just don't understand modern medicine.
He had 9 days, dude. 9 days of like top-of-the-line medical care. What heck?
Whatever. He's a tough dude. He's got a great record on it. I don't know. For me, it was like,
what the
fuck?
We've all seen the stats of like broken vertebrae, strained thumb, like the list of injuries Derek Carr has had. And he's missed a total of what? Three games in 7 years? Yeah. That's crazy.
I will bang on Carr.
He's tough as shit.
I will bang on Carr all day for the right shit. This is not one of them. For me, no.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Thank you. Thank you. You got that cleared up. I don't want to hear any more like a quarterback on Twitter. He's faking an injury.
So I do have one more injury.
I didn't say he was faking an injury. I said he was, to me, again, it's still bullshit that he's playing without any ill effects of it. It didn't seem, if anything, it could have been calling it a significant groin injury.
Just heard from a source that Carr's groin injury was actually pretty minor and he probably should have played through it last week.
Dude, no ill effects.
Calling him a
finish it. Finish it.
Source, my eyes and brain.
Exactly.
So Dr. Rory diagnosed Derek Carr from his couch and called him a pussy for not playing through an injury. Okay.
Kind of.
Make sure I got that right. Heaven forbid I put words in your mouth.
I can't jump on that one. Sorry, Rory. You're on your own on this one.
So let's jump on the shit that we can jump on. How do you think Carr played today, Soto?
I think he played okay. I think that the positives that he did, there was a lot of negatives. I was not encouraged. Our first possession went three and out again.
Five straight weeks.
It's fucking
three and
awful.
Out first possession.
Carr knows this is what I'm talking about Carr stepping up and being that, doing that little extra that the leader has to do. He knows that the defense is the weak point on his team, right? Over the last few years since Gruden's taken over, you can't go three and out. You can't do it. If you're trying to like, okay, you know what? We got a nice full week with Marinelli. You know, let's refocus on these last two games. What did I say? Fly to the ball. You know, everyone's pumped up. Let's get everyone on board. The defense pumping up the offense pumping up the defense. Going three and out is not helping your fucking defense out at all. I was very discouraged about that again, 5 weeks in a row. And third down, that's the money down. That's where you get your paper, baby. And he has the ball in his hands. He has the ability to change the plays to get into the right play. And if the team goes 0-for-8 until that hard count, that's absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible. Can't happen. I understand that if you look at the scope of his season, he's been very good on third down, but not in this game. And this is when we needed him.
And this is, I think, why, like, look, there's plenty of, like, Derek Carr deserves plenty of criticism in a lot of ways. Like, he fumbles a ton. When he feels pressure, he rarely handles it well. Like, sometimes he does, but rarely. Like, he generally moves in the pocket poorly. Like, there's a lot of things that he needs to work on. But you guys always bring up the things that he normally doesn't have an issue with as your big problems. You look at, like, anecdotally. It's like, oh, he's terrible on third down. No, he's not. Historically, he's great on third down. Today, he was bad.
That's what we needed.
Statistically, he's great on third down.
We need him today.
The only stats that matter right now, guys, the stats since we started this slide again. Like, I don't want to talk about Derek Carr over the first fucking 10 weeks of the season, because the 10 weeks of the season don't get us into the playoffs again. It's the same fucking script as last year. You know what I mean?
The first 10 weeks of the season get you in as much as the next 7 weeks of the season. Like, this is what I'm talking about. Like, okay, if the criticism is he falls off late, let's have that conversation. Again, 104.5 quarterback rating tonight, 336 yards. He averaged almost 10 yards at a completion. Like, yeah, that's again, you can't take those away.
I'm not trying to take him away, man.
Derek Carr would be great on third down if it weren't for the 9 times he wasn't. Like, you can't just, like, cherry-pick the stats you want.
Okay. So, with Derek tonight, the first drive matters. You know, like, the overthrow to Aguilar on third down. Some of that's scripted. Some of that's timing. It hasn't been good since the beginning of the season. At the beginning of the season, that was a feature of our offense. We started really strong. We were excellent on third downs, right? Agree?
Yes. Yeah.
Because we also had a ton of like third and twos because our run game was so good.
Could we be more polar opposite to that right here, right now?
No, but I think it's not all on Derek Carr's shoulders because, like I said,
I agree with that.
Before our run game was so good, our third downs were third and two, third and one.
I agree. I totally agree. So when you look at what Carr did today, started fairly shitty, but I was giving him some shit pretty early there, RJ, in our group text. But then what happened after that, that next drive, he came out sharp. Like the throws that he was making today, he did make those kind of vintage Carr on a rope, really, really accurate, great timing on those short routes. Obviously, he's got a really great connection with Waller. He trusts him completely, and he should. Aguilar, he's honestly really developed some really good chemistry with Aguilar, which it kind of sucks that he's the one guy on our, you know, receiving core that is
he's the only veteran receiver.
He's on a one-year deal. Like, we're in this difficult situation now where do you have to pay Aguilar like a number one wide receiver? I don't know, but regardless, at least, you know, we've got a little bit of chemistry there. He feels good with a receiver. That's a positive thing. My big thing today with Carr, it kind of falls back into this debate whether or not Carr is the one making calls at the line versus Gruden calling the play and then Carr running what he's given from Gruden. Mm-hmm. And there's no way that fans can really know how much is which, right? Like how much of it is a predetermined, this is your read, this is what we're expecting. If it's not there, throw it away. Versus, cool, I'm going to give you a base alignment, a base concept, and then you're going to get up to the line. We're going to motion, or we're going to do some hard counts. We'll call out the protection, and then we'll adjust the play from there. We do not know how much of that is happening before the play and how much is happening at the line with Carr at the play. So it's difficult to attribute all of our issues today on offense to Carr. If anything, in this game, I have a bigger issue with how Gruden called the plays versus Carr's throws into certain windows and his decision-making. Carr had some questionable decisions. He held onto the ball for too long. There was one play. It was a blitz on a third down or a second down, I believe. But he made it through his reads, and he got to his dump-off. It was Jalen Richard who was open right over the middle. Uh-huh. And that was the play. That was the moment for that play. Take what the defense is giving you. Do what Ryan Fitzpatrick does, what Philip Rivers does. You get through your progressions, you take the play that's there. Carr chose to hold onto the ball, and he took a huge sack that took us out of field goal range. That is a bad decision that's on the quarterback in a moment where he did everything right except making the play. That's not to say that he didn't have a better game going forward. My issue is if you take that Aguilar play out of it, which again, I think it's a great play, don't get me wrong, but I think there was an element of luck to that play. If you take that play away, Carr's got no touchdowns on the day through the air, and he's probably right around that kind of 250-yard mark on the day, at which point, if his stats are that bad, you'd look at it and say, well, actually, that was a pretty shitty game from Derek Carr. I'm not as sure. Like, again, he made good decisions most of the time. He made good throws, accurate throws most of the time. I feel like a lot of our issues were because the play call didn't necessarily put our guys in positions to succeed, and the personnel management issue, which I mentioned earlier. There's no reason Witten should be getting so many fucking snaps over better players.
I was just going to say, no matter what Derek Carr calls at the line, you can't choose the personnel group.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's on Gruden, and that's been a major issue.
All right, boys, listen to this. From the Atlanta game on to today, 27 of 63 on third down, 43%. Pretty damn good. But today, he was officially 0 for 10 today.
It was rough.
Yeah. I'm surprised.
The run game wasn't what we wanted it to be.
We didn't run the ball.
Yeah. Only 13 carries for Josh Jacobs.
That's fucking what?
Crazy. And it was working.
Yeah.
It was working.
He averaged 5.3 a carry.
This was my other big.
The O line was playing great today.
Yeah. Man.
This was my other big personnel beef that I had that I was texting you guys about. What the hell are we doing in the red zone taking Josh Jacobs out of the game and having Devin Booker in there?
The only thing I can think of, and this isn't a good excuse, the only thing I can think of is they don't want Josh Jacobs taking the beating of goal line rushes. That's the only thing I can think of. Because you're right. It's nuts. You got an all-pro running back. And you're not letting him finish the job in the goal line? I'd love to hear the rationale. I hope someone asked John Gruden that question in the presser tonight. Like, what? Explain your reasoning. Okay, yeah. We want Josh Jacobs to get a rest every now and then. We don't want to wear him out like we did last season. This is where you risk it. You don't risk it when you're in the 50-yard line in the third quarter. You roll the dice on wearing him out on the goal line when you need those six goddamn points.
100%. 100%. And I think when you look at the snap count percentages from previous games, it's pretty like 60 to, you know, like 65-35 type split. Like they're giving him 2-1 and they're keeping it fairly disciplined. I saw in a lot of games, but again, if we're looking at it from that perspective and they're just playing percentages, then it's mismanagement. If they're looking at it from a perspective of keeping him healthy and, you know, not subjecting him to the hits at the goal line, then it's still player mismanagement. It's having weapons that can do damage and not knowing how to utilize them. And that's my biggest beef with this offense. That's why I keep bitching about Ruggs like missing snaps, because we got Witten in the game. I can't stand it, man. Especially
the second to last game of the season when the playoffs are a pipe dream and you want like reps for your live reps for your young guys, right? What's Jason Witten going to do in his 17th season with an extra 3 reps, right? Like, you're not going to learn anything new about him. He's not going to learn anymore. You know, it's nuts. The positive on the tight end side, we got to give Darren Waller a lot of love tonight. 5 receptions for 112 yards. On 6 targets, 22.4 yards average. He's just unguardable one-on-one. Linebacker, corner, safety. Put Shaq in there to try to guard him. No one can. His hands are fantastic. His routes are great. He blocks well downfield. I imagine, like, him running routes has got to be like how Brad Pitt is picking up chicks at the bar. It's just, like, not even fair.
Easy.
Especially with dynamite.
You know what I saw with Waller tonight, and I haven't really noticed it before, but he has that Michael Irvin-esque little ways of getting separation at the very end, where the guy will be on him, and it's low too. It's not up high. Yeah. It's down by the hip. He gets a little bump, a little chicken wing. Like Irvin talks about the chicken wing all the time. That little chicken wing. Not, you don't extend the arm, but you get that little bit of a bump because you're already, you know, he's what, 6'6" or whatever the hell he's 6'4", 6'6". Mm-hmm. You're already taller than the guy. A little bit, couple inches here, and you know, you just jump right over the guy. And I mean, that was that last catch where he the guy was draped on him. They didn't call anything, but he caught it one-handed. That was next level, dude.
I want Darren Waller to impregnate my wife so I can raise the son as my own.
I would pay to see that. Just to make sure everything was okay.
Again, we got Dr. Rory worrying about Derek Carr's groin and Dr. Soto to make sure the insemination process is kosher. Look, I didn't know I was doing a show with two goddamn doctors.
I'll wear gloves the entire time, I swear. Fuck.
I got to put a medical disclaimer on this podcast, dude. Remember. We gotta start including that.
It's gonna be like a Donald Trump tweet when he tweets about COVID. Like, these facts have not medically been proven.
God damn. It's like the whole screen is taken up from that shit. You can't even see anything else.
So check this out. So good. Eric Rowe, who I'm sure everyone knows that name tonight. Like, the poor dude.
Poor guy. So
it's really interesting how teams decide to defend Darren Waller. Like, at the beginning of the season, obviously you got all the hype, and then the Patriots game, right? Remember that game?
Belichick's the only guy that's been able to stop him.
Dude, they hit him with everything. They had single coverage with Gilmore. They had bracket coverage over the top. They hit him with everything, but it was game plan to stop him. And then just as teams started to kind of ease up on the game planning to stop him, he started going off again.
Yeah.
And now at the end of the season, it's almost like he's figured out how to beat everything. So a team like the Dolphins that want to do aggressive shit, they blitz, they play, you know, physical man coverage with Howard and Byron Jones.
I love how they play, by the way. I love their defense, how they play.
I do too. It's a nice defense to watch. It's excitement as a fan. But anyway,
fuck him.
Eric Rowe is a safety. He's a good coverage safety. He's like 6'1", 205, 210. I remember him. He was a stud coming out though as well. Like he performed well in the combine. It's a guy that moves pretty well, and they feel really good about this dude. They're like, all right, man, your assignment this week, one-on-one versus Darren Waller.
You got this shit.
Oof. That's a coach almost saying, fuck you, dude. But like,
that's soul-breaking.
Oh, rough showing for him, not just in coverage. Like, there was a couple of reps where his coverage was fucking phenomenal. It couldn't be any better. And Waller just beat him out. But the one where I texted you guys, like, was the he was lined up in press coverage on the line, one-on-one on his side. And he just shrugged
his ass.
He just shrugged him off and then hit him with this sexy little jab step. And he's gone, and then it's, you know, a perfect hands catch away from the body, and then he's faster than the guy. It's just, it's not even fair. He is an all pro, unquestionably. If he is not an all pro, you know, Raider Nation is going to stand up and have some problems.
I'm amazed Darren Waller was able to run that route when he saw press coverage with that giant boner that I'm sure he had when he saw a corner on press freaking man to man coverage on Darren freaking Waller. That guy had to be like, oh, God, yeah, just drool immediately starts falling out of his mouthpiece when he sees that. Same with Derek Carr when he sees that as well.
The D coordinator is like the friend pumping up his buddy when he's got to fight the bully after school. Like, he knows he's going to get his ass kicked. He's like, nah, dude, nah, just one punch and you'll knock his ass out. Like, no one's ever fought him. No one's ever fought him. You can beat him up. And nope, didn't work out.
Did
you
see that weird stat that NFL Network put up, that Darren Waller has the most receiving yards by a tight end in a 3-game span?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw
like
that.
Weird, I guess it's like a random
175 yards or something like that.
It reminds me of Major League when he's like trying to find, like the announcer's trying to find like good stats for his players. He's like, yeah, so this Johnson is the 7th leading hitter in the American League at elevation against left-handed pitchers on Tuesdays. So there's that. Like, all right,
300 in the Mexican league. At least they didn't say anything about the whole drug issue. That's like the first game.
Dude,
God, I haven't heard that in a while.
We've got to start a streak. We got to see how many consecutive games we can go.
Two game streak.
They didn't mention it last time.
No, they didn't mention it.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Damn, that's wow.
Side note, I gotta give Mark Schlereth 100 points for the morning game when Jason Pierre-Paul had an interception, like
And he dropped
bounced right off his hands, and he had the self-control not to make fingers blown off joke during that time. I would not have that kind of self-control. I would immediately be making jokes.
I bit my lip.
If he had 8.5 fingers, he dropped it. But if he had 9, or at least 8.75 fingers, that would have been an interception.
Yeah, I bit my lip so hard.
A Bronco, but I got to give him props.
Yeah.
Shout out to JPP for having a productive career after blowing his fucking hand up with a firework. Like, shout out to that dude, man. That's
terrible. That didn't look real.
Are you 85% the defensive end you would be with 8.5 fingers versus if you had 10 fingers? Is that how it works? Because he's only playing 85%. That's impressive.
It's got to be hard. Dude, playing with a cast on, I mean, imagine how restrictive that is on your wrist. Like, imagine not being able to grab a jersey, like, with one of your hands. It has to mean something, dude. But, I mean, he's been super productive. He's a great pass rusher still. Like, shout out to that dude.
Does he have to wipe his ass, like, 7 times to make sure he got it right?
He just uses the cast.
2.5 fingers. So let's talk about the defense a little bit.
Well, how do you wipe your ass with your fingers? What the fuck?
You got to get in between the cheeks.
Well,
you just go big open palm and just do surface level. What are you? What are we, animals? You got to go all 4 digits and do the credit card.
Sir.
You got to do the credit card and get deep in between the cheeks.
Why is your ass so dirty?
Mexican food. What do you
think?
That's
true. No. Well,
saw the tamales we made this winter.
Yeah. That's going to be a rough out.
This shit doesn't clean itself up, literally and figuratively. Let's talk about the defense a little bit, because it was shockingly good in big spurts. 3 sacks.
A couple 3-and-outs, no?
A 3-and-out to start the game on their first drive. A couple dropped interceptions. Didn't get the turnovers we normally want, but I tweeted it out earlier today during the game. The defense looked 3 times better than it has under Paul Gunther, just 9 days after his firing. The defense already looks improved. And we can't even say that it's, well, they were playing a down game. Dolphins are legit. Like, they literally benched their quarterback because of what our defense was doing. This gives me so much hope. Like, this gives me the dream that I hope will come true. that the only thing holding back this defense from being at least somewhat average, kind of mediocre, was Paul Gunther.
Right? Even more than that. Look.
Oh, dude. Can't dream that we'll have an above average defense next season. Like, that's even wild for me. But just Paul Gunther leaving alone, and now the defense looks like a standard issue, mediocre defense.
The Dolphins were the worst defense in the league last year, and now they're number one points allowed. So it can happen. It can happen. They have the athletes. They have the guys. They don't look confused. That's what I was telling you guys. You don't see the secondary chatter right before the snap because someone's confused or someone's not lined up right. Arnett fucked us on that last play, not following fucking Hands of Stone, that guy that dropped the freaking pass at the goal line, the possession before. But they played a lot better, man. They played a lot better. That first week is going to be kind of tough. You didn't have the entire week with Marinelli, and you were going against fucking Herbert. Dude, Herbert's a fucking stud. But another weekend, you got some more sacks, got some more pressure. You know, we had a couple of hiccups here and there, but, you know, all in all, much better.
I thought this was a good game for Marinelli. You know, we were talking about what we wanted to see from this defense. Last week, we saw them make the opposing offense one-dimensional. We said, stop the run, worry about the pass, worry about the rookie passer. And they delivered on that. Obviously, there was issues with the pass coverage and the rookie passer beat the shit out of us. But, you know, we made them one-dimensional. That was a sign of improvement. It was, all right, run defense, they can at least play it. And now we just need to work on rushing the passer and getting better on the back end. That's a much more manageable task than a Paul Gunther-based defensive scheme where it's like, okay, they can't communicate, they can't get lined up, they can't rush the passer, they can't stop the run. You know what I mean? We're talking about a list of things versus a couple of things. So today, defensively, there was a couple of things that we saw that we actually asked for again. In terms of stopping the Dolphins' run, which was our primary concern, we wanted to see more three linebacker sets. We wanted to see more base 4-3 defense, right?
Yeah.
And we saw that. We actually saw them rotate through Javon White, the undrafted rookie from UNLV, got some good reps. That was his first, I think, starting reps of the season, if I recall correctly. We saw Kyle Wilbur in there a lot. Littleton probably was his most involved and probably had his best game of the year. I know that's not a high bar, but, I mean, he was at least where he was supposed to be
when he
was supposed to be there. He was hustling to the ball. He was swarming to the ball. He made plays. He had stuffs. He did miss a tackle in the first quarter that kind of stuck out while he had an offensive lineman all over him. He's never going to be the guy that blows up an offensive lineman and stuffs a run in the backfield. Like, he's a speed guy. You know, he's an instinctual speed guy. He needs to play fast. He needs to keep it simple. And you saw a marked improvement in his play today that I think is a direct correlation to Marinelli versus Gunther. Defensive scheme-wise, like, I think Arnett, unfortunately, had a shit game today, and it wasn't because he was tackling with his face. Tackling
with his brain cells?
Dude, the last play of the game, it's, you know, cover two, which isn't a great play call there. It's definitely not a cover fucking zero, but it's not a great play call there just because it leaves soft spots in the zones. So you've got Arnett playing
specifically deep.
Yeah, towards
the
sideline.
To the sidelines, goddamn it.
To the sideline, right? So, The context of the situation is they just need a field goal. So if anything, you want to keep it on the inside of the field. You want to leave the middle, if anything. You want to guard the sidelines, the boundary. Arnett had the flat. There was literally no threat in the flat whatsoever. So he's got no reason not to drop with the receiver there. And then Isaiah Johnson, who's getting some reps at safety, which I think has actually worked fairly well this year. We were asking to see more of that. Unfortunately, he showed his inexperience and he
way too deep.
He lined up too deep and then he immediately goes into his back pedal. And then he's looking inside. He's looking at the deep crosser, the deep seam, as opposed to looking at the boundary. It's two inexperienced guys making a boneheaded play in a play call that didn't necessarily make sense in that moment from Marinelli. And somehow Fitzmagic, dude. I mean, it's kind of like the Deshaun Watson play. When we played the Texans, like, he's literally, the dude had his fingers gouging out his fucking eyeballs, ripping his head off, and like his beard's the only fucking thing that keeps his helmet on, and he somehow completes this pass. I mean,
that ball hung in the air so goddamn long, and he was open by 20 yards.
I'm a little shocked after how well Marcus Mariota played last week that he didn't even get a snap. I think like some goal line reps would be good for him. Some packages where you could take advantage of the fact that he's a moving quarterback, changing things up, you know, at least like force the defense to prepare for two quarterbacks. Give, if anything, give the defensive coordinators on the opposing team a little bit more homework to deal with. Again, we talked about this last week. I really want to see Marcus Mariota start. Just, if anything, just to up his trade value, just to make him more valuable to try to get something for him. You know, what's okay, now that we're officially eliminated from the playoffs, no chance the Raiders can go to the playoffs. You got to give Mariota some reps next game against the Broncos. I mean, if he looks good again, you get a first rounder for him. We can get something for Mariota next season.
I'd take a third.
I'd take anything just to get out of that contract.
I'd actually start Carr again, man. I feel like Carr's – I know we're going to disagree on this again. I feel like he's auditioning as much as fucking Mariota. We still need to see more from Carr, dude. This was another game where the offense let the team down as much as the defense did, if not more. And he's – look how much money we've got invested in this offense. I'm not saying it's because Carr necessarily played bad, but if Gruden's here to stay, which unfortunately we think he is at least for another 2-3 years, you know, the offense is not able to move the ball in critical downs. And that's not despite a run game, because the run game was working. He had all of his weapons. Our offensive line was pretty healthy. Side note here, Colton Miller actually had a shitty game, which I've been hyping him up all year. God, but
he got abused by a linebacker.
He had twice. He had a rough game, dude. It was his first game of the year where I was like disappointed with a couple of, you know, he got beat on that short yardage run.
It doesn't take away from his great season.
He had a bad game.
He's still he's improving like all the time, dude. Every season he's getting better and better. Anyway, the offense, again, like Carr versus Mariota on the last week, I feel like Carr is still auditioning. And it's, even if he isn't auditioning and you believe that Carr is still Gruden's guy going into next year no matter what, which fair enough if that is the case, he has been statistically pretty good. It's just, you know, it's a difference of opinion. For me, I would want Gruden and Carr to prove that they can get this fucking thing right again against the Broncos. Like, I want to see him utilize these players and improve upon 3-0-9 on third down. Like, yeah. Imagine if Carr's season shut down on a fucking 0-9 third down game.
0-10.
Like, we need to see him get this fucking offense moving again. We need to see that Gruden can still call plays that work for this team.
We need to figure out what works. What do you guys make of Pat McAfee's comments? I think it was last week. And he was asked about how the Raiders have fallen apart the last two seasons in a row late with a promising start. And then once you get into week 10, the Raiders fall apart. And he said something interesting. He said it reminded him of Andy Reid before Reid won the Super Bowl last season. Andy Reid would start up fantastic in the first 9-10 games. Yeah, and he would just blow his load with all of his play calls early, and then defensive coordinators got wise to it. He couldn't adjust, and then he became predictable late in seasons. And obviously, as we all know, Gruden goes way back with him. It was definitely something that made me think when Pat McAfee said maybe Gruden just blows his load play calling wise early, and then either becomes predictable later in seasons or tries to outsmart himself. Starting Witten in random positions, starting Booker instead of Jacobs. Like these really questionable things where it's like, Gruden's not dumb. He knows what he's doing with football, but maybe he's just like, all right, I got to do something wild. I got to think of something different because I've used up my entire bag of tricks by week 8. And now I'm just like, oh, let me just replace Waller with a 90-year-old Witten. That'll throw him off their game.
Yeah. Like I told you guys, he reminded me of Henry Winkler in The Waterboy. He was trying to come up with new plays. And he's like, you stand here and you stand here and we're going to fake it. And that's what it looks like. So the two big games that I want to look at as far as Gruden goes is the two people that looking at it would give him defensively the most trouble. That is against the Pats and Belichick, which did not play well, did not scheme well, were able to stop us. And Raheem Morris, who coached under Gruden, Atlanta, fucking stopped us cold. He's predictable. I don't like that we're the last five games, we start the game with the 3-and-out. I don't like that at all. I don't like that we're not giving ourselves a better chance on third down. Okay. We had a lot of, I mean, for all the shit I gave Derek Carr, we had a lot of third and longs. Okay. And we go for more sub 35 yard field goals than any fucking team out there. We just shit inside the 10 so often. It's sickening. It's sickening to see. And that's what I told you guys in the beginning. We can't, beginning of this game, I text you guys, we can't get bogged down inside the 10. And we did it, I think, twice.
This is why I'm so optimistic about next season, for three reasons. And they're all kind of like, you eventually regress to the mean. Okay. Like, I feel like we're not a terrible red zone team. It's part bad luck, part like, when you get as many yards as the Raiders get, you should get X number of points. We are not. The Raiders are not doing that. And I think that has to do with just more statistics and odds and just kind of luck not going our way. Same thing with turnovers. I mean, we should be getting more fumbles and fumble recoveries. We're just not. Part of that is clearly because the defense is terrible, but also it's just statistics. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm so high on next season, is all these like things that don't swing our way should start to swing our way again. Like, things should average out statistically. And those are the two big things. Like, for a team that gets as many yards as we do, we should be getting in the end zone more. And sure, a lot of it's scheme, having Witten in there instead of Waller, predictable play calling. These are all legit gripes, like true issues. But I think a lot of it's just a statistical anomaly as well.
Yeah, for me, dude, I was obviously really, really optimistic with the season.
What was your prediction for the season?
I wanted 9-7 and better. Like, I just wanted a winning season, dude. It's not a lot to fucking ask. Year three, $100 million contract, third year the quarterback in the scheme. It was not a lot to ask with all those picks to get a winning season out of this.
I thought a wild card berth and then out of the first, you know, the first round of the playoffs, I thought that's what we would get. I thought we'd get wild card out the first game, which was fine because I just wanted our young guys to get the experience of being in the playoffs. Get a taste of it a little bit, right? Get that blood in your mouth. Just like, oh, this is the playoffs. I know what it's like now. Next season, we're going to be better. We're going to have that experience. That's kind of what I want. And that's the biggest disappointment to me. I didn't have delusions of grandeur for this season of going to the Super Bowl. Maybe when we were like 6-3, I was starting to think, I started thinking a little bit. I got a little ahead of myself. But the beginning of the season, I was like, let's just get some playoff experience for the young guys. We're only going to get better every year because our team is so young.
I've been fucked over too many times, man. I wasn't even excited at 6-3. I was like, all right, we'll see how this plays out.
Let's see how this plays out. Yeah, I'm calling proof.
I'm calling the bull.
Go back. Shit. Get it.
Nope. I don't believe it's physically possible to stay calm in those scenarios after 14 years of getting it's fucking 43
years, kicked in. Okay? 43 years of getting my dick kicked in for being a Raider fan.
2002. I mean, we're, you know, fucking hell, man. We're looking at 18 years now. And we're talking about maybe getting a winning season in. And look. Wait, let me say my piece on this.
The Raiders have had one winning season since I was a teenager.
Wow. And you're old as fuck.
2016.
It's unbelievably wild. That's the statistical anomaly, is how fucking bad we've been for how long. But let me say this. You talk about statistical anomalies from you know, what's gone on this year, and that's your reason for optimism. We finally had a good schedule this year. When was the last time we had an easy schedule?
We had the easiest schedule after we were 6-3.
It wasn't an easy schedule overall. The first half of the season was rough. It was really, really rough. The second half of the season, where we fell apart, where we should have dominated, was easy. That was the bad part. We did great when our schedule was hard. Shit the bed when our schedule was easy. The bipolar football team.
I mean, by all measures, you look at before the season, what our schedule looked like in terms of strength of schedule, which I know is pretty much bullshit, but still, it was considerably easier than it had been in previous years.
And Browns, Dolphins, actually, those should have been easy games, but they ended up
I mean, yeah, definitely. And, you know, we couldn't have asked for a better end to the year, to be honest, in terms of the schedule and how everything lined up. In terms of major injuries, this wasn't like a Carr got injured, Jacobs got injured, Waller got a major injury. Obviously, Trent Brown being out was a huge loss. Incognito, huge loss on the left side.
The whole line was roughed up this season.
Sharp and change. But overall, it wasn't like we lost a lot of our big significant players in comparison relative to other teams and previous years. Defensively, we got annihilated by COVID, which we don't have we don't have insight into what goes on behind closed doors at the building, but we did not do a good job containing COVID-19 as a team based purely on, you know, what we saw this year.
Dr. Rory, at it again.
Yeah, medical disclaimer, fucking hell. It's just a bummer, right? It's just a real bummer. Like, these guys, we didn't get a chance to see the same sorts of players play together, no continuity. Arnett missing significant time. He was a first-round pick. Like, we needed production from our first-round pick. Cleveland Farrell, when he played, he had a pretty significantly, improved year, I think, by most metrics. The linebacker core, you know, we missed Nick Kwiatkowski for 3 or 4 games. When he came back, he was sensational. He's been one of our best defensive players all year, and he missed today with COVID. Our defensive outlook, I think, is definitely better now over the last couple of days, because we've seen a little bit of improvement at all three levels. Like, we at least have a path to success with the defense, because we've got so much room for growth, right? All we need is discipline. All we need is organization. We need Abram to stop fucking taking people's heads off of flags every game. We need some good, honest pressure from stunts and 1v1 wins. Nothing crazy. Just play the gap. Win your one-on-ones. Well-timed stunts. Well-timed and well-disguised blitzes. That's been a positive of Marinelli. It's been a lot better. And there's less wide open looks for wide receivers. Like, how often did we see just blown coverages and wide open zones? We haven't seen almost any of that, right? It's been kind of individual mistakes or man-on-man coverage losses, which you can improve on that shit. At least we have a path to growth and change, success.
What I'm wondering is if Gunther was that much of the problem, right? If he took that much of the blame, if it was just that, and if what Compton said was true, Will Compton said it was true for last year when he was with the team, not a good teacher, not a good game planner,
blame game.
If that was true last year, why the fuck was he there? What is Gruden doing? Is he just, and this is why I said the very first game, the very first episode, what is Gruden, is he just not looking at the defense whatsoever at all? Does he not know what's going on over there? Because it seems like it is. If a player from last year is saying the same shit that's happening this year, and he was saying it last year, and we were dog shit last year on defense, what the fuck, man? Why did it take so goddamn long to get rid of this guy?
You know, it's like anything else. They're buddies. You can have you can come with excuses all day long, and a lot of them are valid. We didn't have a lot of great personnel on defense last season. True, right? Like Cleveland Farrell lost 15 pounds. He got sick on the way to London to play the Bears. Like, you know, you can crank out those excuses all day long. And if you've got a willing partner in John Gruden, they'll start to buy it, right? Like, it took a historically terrible 3-season run by Paul Gunther to finally get fired.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was the argument. Did it make more sense to fire him in the offseason, which I thought absolutely was the right call.
Me too.
And then when they make the decision, because there was no signs of improvement, we were historically bad. It was pretty one tone, right? There was no real opportunity for improvement because there was so much going wrong. Look at this season. I think once we'd seen those results over 4 weeks, that was when I would have cut him. That again, there was another point there where you could have had a chat internally and said, holy shit, we're not seeing anything. We need to get out of this. It's still kind of early in the season, though, right? And then we hit our bye week, and we're still really, really poor defensively. But it was still the beginning of the season where our offense was winning us games and working. So we were 6-3. Then you're not going to start firing mid-season when your team's 6-3, right? So I think they made the decision internally to keep Paul Gunther around. I think a huge part of that is because Gruden and Gunther are, you know, yin and yang in terms of how they think about football, what they think works in terms of schemes and different run fits and design fits. By all accounts, they worked very, very closely together. Gunther drove Gruden to work every day. Like, they saw each other 20 hours a day, basically, in the offseason. And my biggest concern with Gruden is I'm worried that he overthinks things the same way that Gunther was. And if Gruden wasn't, you know, making it too complicated and we simplified the offense for Carr, could this be a more successful offense? That's the big question that we're not going to know.
Gunther had anecdotal evidence that he was doing a good job. What kept Gunther alive was holding Cleveland to 6 points. You saw that Ravens game the other day.
The weather held Cleveland to six points.
Agreed.
You know that. I know that. But Gunther can say, look at the stat sheet. No touchdowns for Jarvis Landry and Nick Chubb and, you know, Kareem Hunt and this amazing offense. And he held Patrick Mahomes scoreless for a half. I think those two things are like, you know, his little like participation trophy that he put on his shelf. He probably, Paul Gunther probably had like a post-it note with like Patrick Mahomes' second half stats on the monitor of his computer in his office when John Gruden got in, just as a reminder. And that's the thing is you get emotional with stuff like that. And when John Gruden is the friend of Paul Gunther, you're not looking for reasons to fire him. You're looking for reasons to keep him. And those are reasons that you can look at and say like, yeah, we're doing something. Yeah, guys are hurt. It's not his fault. And that's how we ended up. These are all conversations we're going to continue all through the rest of the offseason. And I'm sure well into 2021. We got a debut of a brand new segment that I'm very excited about.
We know you know all about Gruden's grinders.
Offensive linemen, defensive linemen, special teams players, backups.
But what do you know about Rory's grinders?
I think he's a great dude. I think he's got all the talent in the world.
You can't find me, I'll be the closest one on Grinder.
All right, Rory. The first time, this is an award we're giving to somebody. It's like getting a 99-yard rushing touchdown. It's a record that can never be broken. This is a very, very big honor. The very first Rory's Grinder of the Autumn Windbags. Rory, the floor is yours.
The very first grinder. Rory's Grinder, nonetheless.
Which way you swipe?
I was gonna give it to my man Hunt for Renfro.
Okay.
Who?
Hunter motherfucking Renfro.
You called him Hummer Renfro, which was his name in college.
Wow, that's
Hunter.
It's a good writer name.
Here is why Hunter Renfro is doing it for me this week. Yeah. This motherfucker had one of the craziest looking concussions I've ever seen last week.
No flag, no fine, no ejection.
Dude, the guy ran like 80 yards straight into his head.
Full speed.
Just torpedoed his body.
Unreal, right? And then this dude comes back this week as a punt returner and doesn't miss a beat. Like there was one moment in this game that literally got me off of my seat and I was hollering. And it was Hunter Renfro punt return. He throws one of the nastiest little like stutter step moves to the right and then spins out of it. I hope there's a gif of it somewhere online.
Puts his hand on the ground.
It was sexy as hell. Like
saved a touchdown with a tackle.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Threw his head into that tackle. It was one of the best tackles I've seen from this defense all year. Straight up, incredible tackle on the fake punt. But dude, he's a tough son of a bitch, man. When we throw him the ball on a screen and he goes straight ahead, he doesn't go down. It's the same on a punt return, man. He'll keep fighting for yards even though he gives up 40 pounds to the guy. So he's my grinder of the week.
No, double win for Hunter Renfro. He gets the very first Rory's Grinder Award, and he got a new sweet nickname, Hummer Renfro.
Hummer Renfro. That's Renfro. How we must address him from now on. Oh, guys. I got some news.
Lightning just struck Soto's brain. I can see it right now.
I was given the sweetest Christmas gift. My brother and sister got together, and they bought me 5 square feet of land in Scotland, in Aberdeenshire, Scotland. So I am now officially Lord Juan Miguel Soto, and I will be addressed as such. Thank you very much.
I'm still calling you shit dick.
Oh, well.
I don't care how much land you own and wherever. You're still shit dick to me.
I don't even know if you would be able to fit in that square in fucking Scotland.
You can open up a taco stand in that much space, Soto.
God damn it.
How do you verify that? Like, I could just literally print out something and say you're now the king of Iceland on a laminate piece of paper, and you would
know. I have a plot number. I have a pretty official looking certificate, and it's in calligraphy, so I mean it's got to be real.
I'm gonna get you oceanfront property in Arizona for your birthday, just because it seems like this is the stuff that tickles you pink.
I'll take it,
dudes. I just send you both unbelievable photo from this game. Check your texts.
Is it that guy with the dick? His head spun around? Oh, it's that big black dude with the dick, dude.
So it's for the listeners. It's Darren Waller. After he's just made that absolutely ridiculous catch, you've got Rowe trying to figure out what's going on in his life, and then you got Vickers on the sideline and Arden Key.
Oh yeah,
just like that. Oh shit!
So, yeah, pretty sweet.
Such a stud.
I was expecting that dude with the big dick. I just sent you guys a picture.
Instead of a dick, it's just 6'6" of Darren Waller hanging from between his legs.
Oh, God, that'd be better. Perfect.
All right, Soto, since you are our social media magnet, I think this should be our background photo for all of our social media.
Got it.
Woo-wee. All right, boys. Saw a lot of good tonight. Saw a lot of bad tonight. Playoffs are officially out, so now we start looking forward to next season and everything moving forward. I'm RJ. He's Soto. He's Rory. Talk to you Thursday. Knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you for listening to the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure to check out Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. And also make sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd love to see you again each and every time we crank out an episode. Until then, later.